Hey there, you're listening to Filmed in Canada.
It's a podcast about Canadian movies.
If you enjoy what you hear, go to the iTunes store and leave a review for us. It really helps us get noticed.
And if you'd like to continue the discussion, you can check out our Facebook page. Just search Filmed in Canada Podcast. And you can also reach us by email at filmedincanada@gmail.com.
And feel free to go to our website, filmedincanada.net, for our other content and to leave a comment.
Hey, listeners. Thanks for sharing this slice of happiness pie we call a podcast. I'm William.
And I'm Alexander.
And we're going to talk about a Canadian movie again.
Which one?
Is it just Brain Candy or is it Kids in the Hall Brain Candy?
I think it's Kids in the Hall Brain Candy. And I only say that because when I rented it from Black Dog Video, it did not come up when they searched for Brain Candy.
Okay.
But it did come up when they searched for Kids in the Hall.
Ah, interesting. Okay. On the title screen for the movie, it says Kids in the Hall when it says Brain Candy
at
the same time. So, okay. Then it's Kids in the Hall Brain Candy, which is a little bit of a long title for when we post on the website, but so be it. we gotta be official.
Yeah. I would think that people would know it by Brain Candy.
If they know it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know this? Have you, did you know of this movie before I suggested we watch it?
I had heard of it. I hadn't seen it.
Okay. All right. But you think most people will know it by Brain Candy?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think most people still remember Kids in the Hall?
I would say probably anyone my age or older would be on like I'd be on the very cusp of it.
Mm-hmm.
I only watched it because like my older siblings did.
Mm-hmm.
And even then it was like pretty, wasn't a common occurrence for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How about you?
Well, it was on TV when I was sort of at the end of high school. So my peers were certainly, I think, would still be aware of it because they're not I don't think they're an active comedy troupe now. So I think that audience that would just have that automatic name recognition for Kids at All, I think is probably limited.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like Mr. Show was around the same time or was it a bit later?
I think that's later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems like Bob Odenkirk and David Cross have, and maybe to a lesser extent, like Brian Posehn and some of the other people have maybe had more longevity to their careers or at least more notoriety specifically for the two of them than say the guys from the Kids in the Hall.
I think so. But I think, Kids in the Hall being like a Canadian comedy troupe, I think that also kind of limits their exposure.
Yeah.
I guess maybe we should just talk about Kids in the Hall briefly for those who haven't heard of Kids in the Hall before or maybe don't remember them as much.
Yeah.
There's five main guys who are the performers in Kids in the Hall. Dave Foley, Bruce McCullough, Kevin MacDonald, Mark McKinney, and Scott Thompson.
Yes.
So they had a show on CBC that ran from 89 to, you know, I'm used to saying just like the last two digits of a year, but I wonder if it's more appropriate to say like 1989 now that we're in the 2000s.
I don't think so.
No.
Well, until the 2000s catch up to the, mm-hmm. to the 1900s in terms of like later decades.
Well, you realize that when we talk about the early days of cinema, like we would say that silent movie from 1910. We wouldn't say from 10, right?
Right.
Yeah.
From the 10s, but you would say from the 50s.
Yeah.
Because we're already in the 10s and teens now.
Right. Right. Anyways.
Like I feel like I would probably still say the 20s.
Meaning the 1920s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The roaring 20s.
It's getting close. It's getting close though to that time where you got to specify, it seems.
Yeah.
So, sorry, got off topic there.
So, I would say 80s.
80s.
Yeah.
89 to 95
right.
is when Kids in the Hall TV show ran.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of amazing that it was on CBC in Canada. In the States, it ran on HBO and CBS, I think it was. But there was a time when like CBC felt like a very cutting-edge type of programmer.
Right.
Where you could get things that were a little bit more daring that really distinguished themselves from the mainstream networks. Satirical programming that I thought was not geared for mainstream appeal. I thought I caught a lot of that on CBC.
Sure.
Yeah. Also, they programmed a lot of late night movies that were international movies or Canadian movies that I was exposed to through CBC, which have been on this podcast, which we featured on the podcast, like The Reflecting Skin, Leolo. That's
right.
So this is the time, the 90s on CBC is when I caught a lot of these things.
Right.
And so it just felt like something that was a bit more daring. And now when I look at CBC, it seems like it's really kind of folksy and safe. And
right.
So I don't feel that the CBC is what it used to be.
Yeah, they have a new sketch comedy show, the Baroness von Sketch Show.
Okay.
I've seen a few episodes of it. It's an all-female cast and I believe writing team and directing team. I wasn't like enamored by it, but I guess that's something that they're doing now. Hmm. I wouldn't say that it was... Like it doesn't engage in the same sort of absurdist humor. It's more observational, I guess. So like I wouldn't really compare it to Kids in the Hall, other than it being a sketch show and it being on CBC. But yeah, it's been something that I've been meaning to go back and catch more of.
Baroness von Sketch.
Yeah,
I've heard of it. So good sample it sometime. Yeah, mm-hmm. Baroness von Sketch. Do you find that it's being that it like can be politically incorrect?
I can't say that okay. That I can recall anything.
Oh, okay, well, yeah. I guess we'll have to get more familiar with it before I make those kinds of comments.
Yeah.
I guess I see today on CBC, I see like Ron James comedy specials, or I see, is Murdoch Mysteries one of the things on CBC?
I don't know.
Yeah. There's the new Anne of Green Gables thing, which right. I hear is good.
Yeah.
But
Chris has spoken highly of it.
And these aren't strictly comedy things that I'm referring to. It just feels like there's a CBC product that is very culturally safe and
the Great Canadian Baking Show.
I've not heard of that.
it's a ripoff or it's a spinoff of the British Bake Off show.
Okay,
it's amateur bakers get together in a tent and compete to become the top of the class.
Well, I understand one of the most popular shows on CBC currently is that Dragon's Den, where where people talk to rich people to get money. And, so
I actually watched that show. I've
watched it a few times. It can be interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. But I just I guess there's a part of me that just that kind of winces at what we consider entertainment.
Like, well, so. Just in terms of like what we as Canadians create, like Shark Tank is like an infinitely better version of that show, just because there's more bite to it and there's more kind of drama and you know, the Canadian version is much more polite, which is not kind of what you want in the context of you know these. Mm. These cutthroat business people.
Yeah, yeah. I also noticed, like in Shark Tank, they take a long time to build up the person who's pitching.
Yeah.
And give you their story.
Yeah.
Whereas Dragon's Den is just like
there's no budget for that.
Yeah. They're just like one after the other. Just tell us your thing, get on with it.
Yeah.
Next, please.
Yeah. And yet, Dragon's Den was the original.
Yeah.
Version of it.
Yeah. Again, we're getting off topic really quickly. What were we talking about? CBC asked you if you thought Baroness von Sketch was like tame or if it was edgy. Okay, I want to bring that up because I watching Brain Candy and reflecting back on watching Kids in the Hall on television.
Yeah.
Then and now, I do feel that it is kind of edgy. Like it is kind of making jokes that are a bit inappropriate.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I think that's why I'm surprised that it ran so long on CBC.
Right,
our national broadcaster
instead of Showcase or something.
Yeah, like one of those private cable channels or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm glad that it had its run and its exposure back then.
Yeah.
So we're way off topic, and I said I was going to just talk about the Kids in the Hall.
What's your favorite Kids in the Hall sketch?
I didn't watch it all the time,
right.
So I don't have like I wouldn't be able to like just pull out. A sketch to recall.
Yeah.
But there's like little stupid things that I just never get tired of. And there was one where there's this guy who always like puts his hand up and he pretends like he's pinching people's heads.
Yeah. I'm crushing your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Mark McKinney.
Okay, all right. See, I don't remember the specifics of it, except I remember the sketch, and I found that hilarious. And me and my sister used to do that all the time.
Yeah, I would say as a kid, that was definitely the one that like my brothers and I engaged with on a pretty regular level.
Okay.
But going, I was watching some of the DVDs more recently, and like in the past maybe 3 or 4 years, and Bruce McCullough's Cabbage Head character is just the best. Like, it, for anyone, if they have seen the sketches, basically the first one starts out as a date, and they're in a restaurant, and he's holding a menu up, and you don't see his face at first, and they're just kind of having a conversation like, oh, what are you going to have? What do you think? And the woman played by Kevin McDonald says, oh, well, you know, I think I might get a salad. You know, it's kind of light. And he says, you would say that since I have a cabbage for a head. And he pulls the menu down, and it's just Bruce McCullough, but with a piece of cabbage on his head. And then from there, it just proceeds as more or less a regular kind of bad date. Like, this guy's just a kind of macho misogynist, and, you know, just making these awful comments or whatever, but he's got a piece of cabbage on his head. It's just inherently more funny. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that describes a lot of what is really funny about Kids in the Hall is like, and this movie even is, you have these setups that are kind of generic and conventional, but then they just do something really stupid on top of it, and it makes it way funnier.
Yeah. Would you compare it to Saturday Night Live, or would you compare it to Monty Python's Flying Circus?
Yeah, probably more on the level of Monty Python.
Yeah.
I mean, but although it feels like Monty Python, at least for the movies, they definitely had like way bigger budgets to work with.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think their popularity and their audience reach was much more significant.
Yeah.
But I think Kids in the Hall is, it feels like it's more in that tradition of kind of absurdist sketch humor that is deceptively stupid, but it's actually pretty smart.
Yeah. That's actually an interesting comparison point, because I wasn't thinking of Monty Python at all when I was watching this movie, but maybe we can get into that comparison point a bit later.
Well, I just bring it up because I remember in high school, like, my friends and I were, as you know, we were trying to discover for ourselves what's funny. I mean, the things that you, and I think around that time, SCTV had kind of waned. So,
right. So
your choices were Saturday Night Live or Kids in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you weren't exclusively one or the other camp, but there was, you could certainly tell, like, certain kids who found Saturday Night Live the funniest thing, they were kind of, you kind of saw them differently as the kids who thought Kids in the Hall were really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should say that, vice versa. I mean, sort of the mainstream appeal was Saturday Night Live. Did you see who was on Saturday Night Live on this weekend?
And, right.
Whereas, like, it would be like a smaller group who would say, like, that sketch from Kids in the Hall was hilarious.
And I feel like that speaks to what we were saying about Dragon's Den versus Shark Tank and just Canadian media versus American media in general, because, like, SNL just, it has all this momentum behind it. It has a much larger audience. They have, you know, the celebrity guests that come on to host it. Like, all of those things kind of work in its favor in terms of it being more appealing, more popular. But there's this weird thing over here that, you know, a few of us up north like more, kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think it's because it is reaching a smaller audience. I get a feeling like that's why they can be a bit edgier. That's why they can get away with some jokes, because there's not going to be like a wide outcry that, you know, something was offensive.
Right.
It's just kind of swept under the rug because, like, well, who watches that stupid show anyway?
Yeah.
Right? So Kids in the Hall with the five members that we noted, they were formed from a troupe that was in Calgary and a troupe that was in Toronto. They united to be what was then Kids in the Hall back in 1984. And then there was a time where some of them were courted to be writers for SNL.
Right.
And it was through their exposure there that Lorne Michaels noticed them. And then when the troupe was reunited, then he helped produce their show.
Right.
as I said, ran from 89 to 95. And Brain Candy comes out after their show is, they're no longer making the show. So Brain Candy in 96 is like their first feature and only feature.
Right.
But there's also a miniseries called Death Comes to Town that came out in 2010. But if we expand our coverage to miniseries, we could talk about that some other time. Yeah. But I guess Brain Candy was a failure financially if they didn't do any more. I do remember that when it came out, I kept coming across bad reviews for it. So critical reviews were very negative.
Right.
But my friends and I went to see it and we thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
So looking at Rotten Tomatoes, this is one of those movies where it has a lower, where it's technically rotten, but the audience rating is pretty high.
Right.
So
critics didn't like it. You and your friends liked it when you saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
Did we like it this time around?
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, I did and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think like that sort of sketch comedy archetype or framework can be difficult to sustain across a 90-minute running time.
Yeah.
And like trying to weave a narrative out of it. I find I have the same issue with some of the Monty Python movies.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I would say that I definitely got some good laughs out of it, but.
Is it just that it runs out of steam after a while?
Yeah, I think so.
I think in the third act, because they have to resolve the narrative. Yeah. It feels like it's not moving as fast anymore and the jokes aren't coming quite as often. I agree with that, but I think it's still it's a good ride, I think.
Yeah. And I guess I just don't really understand like what it's trying to say about its subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, should we just run down the basic plot then?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's multiple characters throughout the movie played by the performers from Kids in the Hall. But it seems like the main narrative is that Dr. Chris Cooper, Kevin McDonald?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's invented a drug that cures depression. Or at least it's marketed as the drug that cures depression. And so the pharmaceutical company that he works for rushes it to market. So that they have a product for the season or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a big hit and people are taking this drug that just makes them happy. But then the side effect is that some of them are falling into a coma.
Right.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just that's the foundation for hilarity right there, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So it's about corporate greed and it's about our wanting to have a pill solution for all of our worries.
Yeah.
It's about how, well, if, because Kids in the Hall they trade in comedy. It's interesting that the story is about, the lesson of the story is like, sometimes it's okay to be sad.
Yeah.
Like maybe just being happy and, I'm equating being happy with comedy and laughing.
Right.
But maybe that's not the solution to life.
Right.
So
the inside out of its generation.
It is.
Yeah.
So it's kind of self-reflexively subversive, isn't it? For them to say in a comedy that comedy, again, I'm equating comedy with happiness, isn't the cure-all.
Right. There was a Netflix special recently, Hannah Gadsby. Do you see that?
No.
It's a comedy special, but it's more of kind of a, it's more of a performance art piece in a way because she kind of deconstructs the stand-up comedy routine in a way. And ends up revealing that like all these things that she's joking about, you know, have like say whether it's like sexual assault and she's able to turn something like this horrible experience of hers into a joke and people laugh about it on stage. But behind closed doors, she's kind of destroying herself because she's not like validating her own emotions and these things. And so the comedy becomes destructive for her in a way. And so it's just interesting to see a comedian like kind of peel back the curtain and reveal like what's actually going on inside their brain when they're joking about some traumatic things that might have happened to them. And like she kind of ends it by saying like I'm done with comedy, like I'm going to do other things now.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very powerful special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, some of the subplots in Brain Candy, though, where people are trying to find their happy memories.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes from pretty horrible places.
Yeah.
right. So there is that tension too of let's laugh at something that's very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was saying earlier what I like about some of the better or some of the Kids in the Hall sketches that I like the most is that there's just kind of a straightforward setup, but then just this weird absurdist thing added on top of it, like the Cabbage Head sketch. I like in this movie that a lot of the interactions between the scientist and the corporate people, like they're fairly straightforward, but then they'll just make these weird grimacing noises or like just weird gestures, and like they just don't act like actual people, and just kind of they're kind of highlighting all of these elements of, I guess, maybe the sociopathy that comes along with being a CEO or whatever you want to call it, but turning these people from like controlled individuals that, you know, just need to make their profits and whatnot, and then adding this over the top element to the performances at like that, even though they're just kind of small chuckles, I would say that's one of the things that I enjoyed most out of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just like that, even like background characters, they just have a bit of some odd energy to them that really makes them pop from the background.
Yeah.
So yeah, the quirks of the foreground characters and the like odd energy of background characters, I think it's, that seems to be, like a part of what Kids in the Hall does.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Some of the characters in Brain Candy, do you recognize them from the TV show?
No.
Okay.
I did not.
Because I don't know for sure, but like the two cops, were they from the show?
Okay. I honestly can't remember, yeah.
Okay. What about Cancer Boy?
Also can't. I don't remember Cancer Boy.
Okay. It just seems like he would already be an established character.
Right.
I'm not positive about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Although Scott McDonald's gay character, like he did those monologues, and I think he had a mustache like that, but this would have been at a much much earlier point in that character's life if they're intending to make them the same.
Hmm.
Just because although no, I think he's kind of talking as himself. He would do these monologues where he was just talking in this very garish way to the camera, kind of thing, like at the end of an episode.
Hmm. Okay. I don't remember those.
Yeah. But no, yeah, I can't think of any specific characters.
Okay. I think the cameo by Queen Elizabeth II, though, that's a recurring cameo from this TV show.
Should we just talk about some of our favorite gags?
If you like, yeah.
Yeah?
Sure.
When the media guy gets hit in the eye by the bird.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just becomes, like, wears an eye patch for the rest of the movie. There's something in my eye.
That gag is just so he can wear an eye patch.
Right.
Right. It's just an odd thing that, it's an odd gag. It doesn't, like, cause it doesn't further pay off later.
No.
That he has an eye patch.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
What are you saying, that there's like a common thing in movies that they just want certain characters to wear eye patches?
Oh, I'm just wondering. I'm just trying to think of another example where a character gets their eye poked out like mid movie and then that's wear an eye patch.
I guess I'm thinking of Buster in Arrested Development.
Oh, okay, I've been watching
all having a hook for a hand.
Okay, I'm a little bit aware. I'm aware of Arrested Development, but I haven't like watched all.
Yeah, his hand gets bitten off by a loose seal,
mm-hmm.
And the mother's name is Lucille.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the show, he has a. I guess at various points he has a prosthetic hand, but most of the time he's got a hook.
I think one of the things that Kids in the Hall got away with when nobody was watching it, or a small portion of the viewing public was watching it, was all the gay humor.
Right.
And so I'm watching it this time in Brain Candy, and I'm wondering, I wonder if these jokes play the same way that they used to play.
Right. So what, like, how do you think it would have been received differently at the time?
At the time,
I guess we're referring to all the men running out of the public bathroom.
Yeah, so there's a recurring joke of that men are meeting in public bathrooms and the cops stumble upon it or someone else stumbles upon it.
Right.
And then they'll have to dash out of the washroom. Right. Yeah. So that happens a few times. Two times.
Yeah.
There's also Scott Thompson's character, the closeted family man.
Yeah. Right?
So I mean, whenever we go into his fantasy world, or is it an actual memory? It's a bit unclear.
Well, I think there's a bit of memoryception that's going on, but the first memory I feel like is real, and then he goes inside of a memory inside of a memory, or like a dream inside of a memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Like even patient 951. I mean, that seems to be like a memory that seems to be exaggerated.
Yeah.
Of her little Christmas dinner that she tries to give to her ungrateful kids, right? Anyway, so the closeted family man, that his whole family is aware that he's closeted, but he just won't come up with it.
Mm.
And that he can't hide the fact that he's just watching gay porn in the house. And then later that he has,
although it seems like it's just like a video version of a fireman calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a PG version of gay porn, but in the movie it's played for laughs, obviously. Yeah. And I guess it's a thing you could play for laughs or you could play seriously, but that the viewer is invited to kind of laugh at this plight, I think, is maybe a bit more touchy these days.
Yeah.
Do you think?
I don't know. I mean, like it ends up that he like finds his happiness and embraces who he is, and the family's happy for him. So.
Yeah, and I was almost going to say like his outcome from the drug is positive.
Yeah,
except for the coma. But
like, I feel like the way that joke is played kind of would have been more subversive at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just instead of like just laughing at him, like for being gay, it's like they're laughing at him because he's not embracing being gay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And then there's a whole celebratory sing song.
Yeah.
When he finally comes out.
Yeah. Well, go back to the public washroom meetups then. I mean, could that be a hurtful stereotype of the gay lifestyle, or is that just I think the movie would want us to say it's a common enough stereotype or something that we kind of accept or believe is common in the gay lifestyle, that you can make a joke out of it, and everyone knows it's a joke, right?
I feel like it could also be read that, like, given the sheer quantity of people that are flowing out of this bathroom, mm-hmm. and likely could not have space to be doing their business in this bathroom in the first place, it, like, in a way, it's making fun of non-gay people who think about these things and like all these hooligans in these bathrooms, like they just, that's what they would imagine. They would imagine 100 dudes in a bathroom doing God knows what. Oh my goodness. But in reality, it's, you know, it's two or three or four or whatever that are
probably, you probably would think it's more discreet, but yeah, the exaggeration is like how many people are involved.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Okay. So you don't think that watching that kind of a scene in the 90s versus today, you don't think it's any different?
I mean, I guess to your point, like maybe the same joke wouldn't be made, but watching it now versus then, it didn't seem...
I laughed.
Yeah.
Quite heartily.
Yeah. So. I mean, I guess we're both not gay, but like...
But question mark?
No, I guess of course we're gonna laugh at it because it's that's a whole other thing, and we can just laugh at it.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of what I'm trying to get at. Is like when I was a teenager, and that joke was made in the 90s, I wouldn't have thought given a second thought that like I find that really funny.
Yeah,
that's a funny joke, and I guess and now I hesitate to say like is it a. I mean, my reaction to it is like that was a funny moment that they staged.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm not so sure if it is a good joke anymore.
Okay.
But I think what you point out though is that it's the level of staging that kind of makes it more of a joke that carries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Cancer Boy might be more touchy.
Yes. Even though, and that was what I laughed quite hard at that
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cancer Boy is a character who shows up when Dr. Cooper, he goes to a function to celebrate the drug. And I think there's supposed to be celebrities and other people at the party.
Yeah.
But, and then Cancer Boy
is an esteemed guest of honor or whatever.
So he's in a wheelchair and he's happy to meet the doctor so we assume that Cancer Boy is taking the drug as well. Gleeman X. So Cancer Boy is played by, is that
Bruce McCullough.
Bruce McCullough. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I can immediately identify Dave Foley and Scott Thompson. Okay. And then the other ones I kind of have to pause to.
Right.
It's not their fault. It's my fault. Yeah. But maybe Kevin McDonald, I can recognize him too.
Yeah.
But Bubble Boy was like a famous comic character from a sketch show, right? Bubble Boy?
The Bubble Boy was in Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, yeah. Okay. All right. So that's after this. So that's after Cancer Boy.
Right? It could have been around the same time, depending on if it was a character from the show.
Hmm. All right, but basically it's because it's like this dying kid, played by man, and he's, I guess it walks a line between whether you're sad for him or you're laughing at his enthusiasm. He's so happy to meet Dr. Cooper, and he goes to shake his hand and he says, ouch, because he got hurt by shaking his hand.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, don't worry, it's because I have thin marrow or something. Right?
Yeah. My marrow's low
today. Yeah. But he's just like not fazed by it. He's just like, oh, don't worry, it's just the marrow.
Yeah.
So it's that, like, do you feel sorry for him, or are you just kind of laughing at the fact that he doesn't even think too much of it?
Right.
And that he's dying. It's, you know.
I think more than anything, I'm just laughing at the fact that it's a grown man trying to appear as a child,
right,
in a wheelchair. Yeah. And again, just the weird mannerisms and things like that, that like when he hands Kevin McDonald, when he hands Dr. Cooper the like little hors d'oeuvre, and just the way that he does that and the face that he has, like it's that's just so absurd. and then I think as he leaves the scene, he just says, every day is a gift.
Yeah.
And like, that's just inherently funny. I don't know.
I think we're laughing at the performances, and I think we're just really into the enthusiasm of the performances.
Yeah,
we're
not, like if I were to meet a child that had bone cancer, and he were to say to me, every day was a gift, like I would internalize that message much differently than when these idiots are saying it in the context of their stupid movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now are we glad that the character is Cancer Boy and not like mentally challenged boy? Because that would be different, right? If Bruce McCullough is playing like a mentally challenged boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although should it be different?
Yeah, shouldn't it be?
I don't know.
Okay, well, I guess for me the dividing line would be if you play someone who doesn't have the mental faculties there.
Right.
Then I think you're playing up your performance is based on, you're tapping into something that says like, this is how someone who isn't fully aware of themselves would act.
Right.
Versus Cancer Boy.
It's making fun of the individual as opposed to,
I think it's making fun of their shortcomings.
Yeah. But also kind of making fun of how like we as a society feel like we need those stories of these kids that have overcome so much hardship because it like makes us feel better about our own lives. Like, I feel like that's part of it as well.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I think some of that's there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think because Cancer Boy, he doesn't seem like he is mentally incapacitated. He's just like an energetic kid who happens to be dying of cancer.
Yeah.
So I think we don't have that extra hurdle of like, are we laughing at his misfortune?
Right.
I don't know if that made sense at all. It was a very funny bit though.
Yeah.
I thought that was a funny character.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. All right. So some of the borderline uncomfortable humor in Kids in the Hall. So there was a moment that I thought the staging really kind of addressed the fact that they're very deliberately wanting to make you uncomfortable. It's when Dr. Cooper, he wants to tell the media that like the drug is harmful.
Right.
And then the CEO takes him down to the basement where they have like this room full of people who are in their walking comas as a result of the Gleeman-X. And Dr. Cooper says, like, he's not going to go along with this. So he says, fuck stummies, referring to the CEO's...
indigestion pill.
Yeah, his, like, star product from years ago, right?
Yeah.
And the CEO says, like, no, on second thought, I'm not going to stuck... it's hard to do, right?
Yeah.
The CEO says, no, on second thought, I'm not going to fuck stummies. At that moment... the camera pans to show you that there's a little kid in the scene in the background. Did you notice?
No.
But it seems very deliberate that, yeah, we're going to fucking swear and we have kids in the scene.
Right.
And I just thought, like, oh, okay. It seems like there's no other reason for that camera move except to say, like, these are our background players. So I think it goes to reinforce, like, they're aware of how they're really walking the line, and they're not afraid of the fact that you might be offended, or you might think that it's offensive to stage these kinds of scenes.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So I mentioned earlier just kind of like enjoying moments and like definitely laughing hard at certain points of the movie, but ultimately like feeling like the narrative and just the whole thing doesn't kind of hold together as well. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's like as an involving narrative as, say, Strange Brew.
Right.
But I thought it was enough for me to carry me through the movie. I think when it starts to focus on Dr. Cooper and the whole Gleeman-X plotline, we lose some of those subplots. And I think that's... for me, that's a little bit of a loss because I was enjoying seeing those performances in the subplots as well. But maybe those are best. Maybe they're best served as like small bits that dress up the scenes rather than like the rock singer who with his really depressing rock.
Right.
But then his music is ruined because he becomes happy, but he actually wins the Grammy or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess it works out for him.
Right. His fans become fans of Dr. Cooper.
Yeah. So I don't know if I need to see that character with more scenes.
Right.
So maybe it's not necessary.
Yeah. And I mean, like they have that whole thing at the video awards where Dr. Cooper is presenting one of the awards and like that doesn't really make any sense.
Well, just because he's a celebrity.
Yeah.
And they can write bad jokes, bad MC jokes for award shows. Yeah, that was pretty good.
And another chance for Cancer Boy to get on screen.
That's right.
Under the category of best rap, hip hop, and folk artist.
Do you like drag shows? Do you like drag performances?
I'd say I'm indifferent.
Okay. I think generally I'm not into them.
Okay.
And I don't begrudge anyone who enjoys them either. It's just not for me.
Yeah.
But I do find watching Kids in the Hall in drag is pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why that is, why I have that exception. But
Right.
Like even, I would say even more so than Monty Python. I don't find Monty Python doing drag very funny.
Right.
But Kids in the Hall, I do.
Yeah.
So maybe they're better.
Although, well, I would consider drag performances different from... like comedians dressing in drag.
Okay, yeah, no, sorry. I guess, if you want to make that distinction, we're talking about comedians dressed up as women,
right,
in this case, rather than like a drag show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty not into drag shows.
Right.
And again, it doesn't matter if you're into it, and I'm glad that they exist for people who enjoy it, but that's not my thing.
Yeah. To go back to referencing Seinfeld, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing's wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yes. Getting to the end there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we get there, that cab driver, was he a recurring character from the show?
Do you remember? The voice was similar to the Crushing Your Head guy.
Yeah.
Which was also Mark McKinney. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't think it was a recurring character.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. With his really, like, really bad Quebecois accent.
Yeah.
it reminded me of this time that I went for a visit in Montreal. Yeah. I took the train to Montreal, and as the train is pulling into the station, this the guy like in the seat across from me. He says, "So you're really in the cum now?" Eh? I said, "What?" He said, "I said you're really in the cum." We're pulling into the Communauté Urbaine Montréal. The cum, eh? It's like, okay. Yes, we are.
Just some fucking creep, eh?
But that reminded me a little bit of the cab driver. Yeah. I just thought it was very funny because he was very kind of a profane guy.
Who, yeah. I don't think it was meant to be a Quebecois accent because he said he was like Croatian or something.
Yeah, but just that. Okay, well, it's like a. Like a Quebec immigrant.
A gravelly Eastern European.
Yeah. But maybe just not. I mean, you grew up on that side of the country. Is it? Yeah. Everyone's just a little bit more profane?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So we should give this sucker a comparative rating, yeah?
Yeah. You want to compare it to another... another movie that came that was inspired by Canadian sketch comedy.
Yeah.
All right.
Strange Brew.
All right.
Which we talked about, would have been about a year ago, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was in 2018.
Early.
Because I remember watching it over Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was in, I think it was in a different apartment. It might have been 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two years ago.
Yeah. But it was a good episode. You should certainly look that up,
yeah,
listener, if you haven't heard it already.
And watch the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we like Strange Brew a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So that'll be our sort of zero level.
Zero level, yeah. All
right.
I'm going to say Strange Brew -4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not too far off for me. So, yeah, Strange Brew -3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we said, Strange Brew kind of has... a better narrative through line. Although like the story still doesn't make much sense, but like it's deliberate in its nonsense, I guess. Whereas this one, like, it might not make sense, but it's just kind of in a way that's just like tiring, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Or,
well, I think it's more of like a like scattershot humor. I mean, it's some of the jokes hit and some of them don't. But there's just a lot of it. And I just appreciate the effort.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So I think I might try to make it a point for myself to check out Death Comes to Town.
Mm.
In hindsight, it's a little bit disappointing that there wasn't more Kids in the Hall movies.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they reunite to do stage shows or something over the years. But it's just one of those things. It was kind of a Canadian institution that I didn't know I missed until it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's it for this one.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening. Check out our other stuff on our website. And send us your comments if you care to. Tell your friends about the podcast.
Indeed.
Tell your enemies about the podcast.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And even your frenemies.
Right. Then until next time.
Bye-bye.